give a fuck.
Are you sure?
I just don't give a fuck.
Presenting The Art of Not Giving a Fuck with Garrett John.
Hey there, folks. This is Garrett with The Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And again, I'm here with Lance. Welcome again, Lance.
Hello, hello.
And we're here tonight to discuss some fun, maybe some deep, maybe some scary items tonight. This is kind of a corollary to the victim to adventurer theme that we're always going to stick with, but that we've been focusing on heavily lately, that necessitates the topic of tonight's podcast, which incidentally is facing death to come back to life. Now, before we dive right headlong into that, I'm going to say you will hear some baby chicken sounds in the background. And also, I'm using a phone mic because we're out in the jungle here. I'm out in the jungle in the coast, Caribbean coast of Colombia, for just another couple of weeks. So rather than not do a podcast, we figured we might as well just do one, dive right in and keep on going. So if you hear those sounds in the background or any other sounds, those are basically the jungle and some of the domesticated creatures and things going on in the background. So there's that. And without further introduction, my friend Lance, I believe you had something very interesting to introduce here before. So go on and let us have it.
Yeah, I think there's an important transition between the victim and the adventurer, which we barely touched on. And it's kind of the launching point. And I came across a visual representation of this that I think really hits home. It's from the movie Revolver, if you've ever seen it. And if you have seen it, maybe you'll look at it through different eyes this time around. It's the elevator scene. The link's attached. I checked some other links, and some of them cut off the edit a little too soon. So definitely click on the one that's we have attached. Anyways, the scene itself exemplifies how the victim wears many convincing disguises and voices as it resides in our heads and our awareness. And if you don't have a personal relationship to what you see in that video, the chances are there's a victim haunting you more than you may care to admit. But the video exemplifies something beautiful when it shows that when death and fear is confronted honestly and thoroughly, fear doesn't have a hold of you anymore. And I'll leave it at that. Now, I think now would be a great time to watch that video and come back, and you'll be able to share in our conversation on a deeper level. So go do it.
All right, folks. So if you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher or any of those other locations, then what you can do is go to radicalundoing.com/blog, and you'll find, if you just scroll on through there, depending on when you're listening to this, you'll find this episode, the death episode, and you can find the link, find the video right there in the actual page where you'll see the podcast posted. And we'll make sure that there's a link there in all the areas where you can possibly see that.
Okay, now that you're back and you've watched the video, I have another little experiment for you to do while you listen to the remainder of this show. Imagine that there's a corpse with you, wherever you are. If you're driving, it's in the passenger seat. If you're sitting on your couch, it's beside you there. If you're in bed, it's beside you in bed. If you're walking, you can carry it on your shoulder. So for the rest of the show, you have company. Enjoy. Now, G, let's talk about what prompted this conversation, other than it seeming like the right time to have it.
Well, yeah, well, because, yeah. Well, the interesting thing is that what got me really thinking about this topic of death and fear and then suffering, we'll have to get into suffering a little bit too, because that relates to people's fear of death in a big way. In some ways, the fear of suffering is the same as the fear of death. You're afraid that you're going to suffer through it in some level, or that you're going to suffer from the loss of other people or suffer on some way or another, which ultimately boils down to a frustration of your expectations, your ideas that everyone's going to be around forever, and that basically whatever situation you happen to be in is going to remain stable forever on some level. Now, there might be some truth to that. There might be a level of stability that does remain forever, but in order for you to experience that, you're going to have to face the scary, dark corners and closets. And one of the biggest ones that makes that easy to do is the specter of death. So on a personal level, what I believe you're referring to, Lance, what I mentioned about riding on the back of a motorcycle here in the jungle lately, and then we'll leap back in time to an experience each of us had separately, but that was turned out to be remarkably similar. That's the Museum of Death. You'll also find links to that. But first, the motorcycle thing was interesting. I took a motorcycle taxi from one town here on the coast, which is about half an hour away. Or in this case, it might have been a little faster because we were going pretty fast. But I rode on the back of the motorcycle. I did have a helmet, but there was no visor on it.
Don't forget about your corpse.
Just kind of open air. And I was wearing ridiculously wearing a t-shirt and shorts. And so many times, actually, during the entire ride, I felt like I was holding on to the seat. And I felt like at any time I could just completely die in a million different ways. And all those ways flashed through my head, you know, getting torn to pieces by the side rail, or, you know, how I would try to manage just flying along the road with just those clothes of mine on, or having to roll or flying in the air, hitting another vehicle, you know, going around a curve. And as we're going around the curves, I see all these roadside shrines, you know, with crosses and flowers, where people have died, maybe on motorcycles, maybe not, but either way, a little bit haunting on these jungle roads. Jungle Road, one road, it was actually, you know, it's paved and everything is nice, but still, so throughout that ride there and back, and my life was sort of in the hands of the person who was driving. Turned out to be a pretty cool guy, actually, but there are ones I wouldn't have wanted to ride with as well. Guys I see down there doing that, offering that service. But riding on that, yeah, it felt to me a very clear confrontation with death, at least in my own mind, but something I'm pretty used to and was able to stay calm and let myself relax and breathe and get into the experience, close my eyes from time to time, open up to it, which is always refreshing, always energizing. I know I'm in the middle of an adventure, and that's one of the aspects of adventure. You never know what you're going to have to do. In this case, it was to travel to the nearest cash machine, which happens to actually be half an hour away from this town. So now you're hearing the dogs outside possibly too. But yeah, that's, again, part of the place, part of the situation. So,
once we start hearing machine guns, we'll start to get worried.
Right, exactly. No, I think that phase of this town and this place for now has passed, but that's what I'm told. But yeah, so that's an interesting thing. And like I wrote in the email for tonight, I wrote about, you know, black widows and tarantulas and scorpions and different things, and kind of how my fear of those, or when I first saw the National Geographic videos of black widows or tarantulas. They always would interview people who'd been stung by them and went through some traumatic experience. And the same with rattlesnakes and same with all these different creatures from around the world or around the United States, different places, certainly in the jungles here. Now, in reality, I've had those experiences. I've been around those creatures. And yeah, sometimes I was pretty frightened. But after the first couple of encounters, it gets easier and easier. And I can appreciate them. They're beautiful, interesting creatures, all of them. And black widows and whatnot. But I used to think as a kid, well, I'm never going to leave Minnesota because I don't want to be around rattlesnakes, black widows, tarantulas, poisonous snakes, you know, whatever else. And so that could have been something that could have lodged in there in my unconscious and then kept me living in the same town forever, you know, or in the same state without ever realizing why, and then creating all these victimizing reasons for staying there, because at some point I was terrified that I'd get stung by a spider, you know, or whatever. So that's one little aspect where facing death, facing fears, and these imagined future catastrophes can actually open the door into you being able to do adventures. Like, now I'm in the jungle. It's fine. It's okay. The first day was freaky, confronting and meeting all these new creatures. But once you kind of get a feel for them and realize none of them give a shit about you at all, then you can handle the ones that do give a shit about you, like the mosquitoes and flies and whatnot. And then from there, pretty smooth sailing. You know, then you deal with the motorcycles or whatever comes next. But so that's sort of the where the inspiration for this came up, but I see that it's a necessary transition. It's kind of hilarious because death is going to be there in your life no matter what, right? Your grandparents, maybe your parents, depends on who's listening, but it's going to come close to everybody. But you can ask yourself some interesting questions about it.
Well, it's it's a funny thing to talk about. Mm-hmm. As if we know anything about it other than the effect it has on us while we continue to be alive. Look over at your corpse. And they jar us. There's this jarring experience, whether it's a near-death experience or a relative dying, or the brushes that we have with death and with death. And each time it comes around, it has something to teach you. But not many people want to willingly pull that thread to see where it takes them. You know, you may have a near-death experience and experience a new rush for life and appreciation of life. But you probably don't want to go and explore that any further either. So this is about a slightly different attitude where you become curious about death, your death, and once you do that, you start to see it all around you. You can see it all around you.
Two things. One, as a precursor to the Museum of Death, something to remember about it being a tough topic or a difficult or strange topic to dive into real deeply. It's actually really enriching and beautiful, and you'll get that experience from just even this podcast. I know you can't introduce death without something occurring, even the idea of it. So pay attention to whatever happens for you while you're listening to this. But one thing is, it's all over the place. Turn on any TV show and you're going to come face to face with death in so many different ways. You know, almost every movie, almost every show. I mean, even like, you know, The Walking Dead is just like full on death all the time on the show. I mean, from so many different angles. So it's there hidden, you know, among all the different media that you see, but the Museum of Death somehow penetrates, whereas all that media doesn't seems to numb people more to it when they ignore it or something. Whereas a museum is going to, I'm guessing, bring you face to face with it. And hopefully this podcast, even as we go through it, but Lance, what was it like then when you first stepped in there, when you were, when you first walked into that place?
Going to the Museum of Death is an active experience. you wake up in the morning, you plan to go, and it's, you make a day around it. So it's less of a passive activity than some mm-hmm. of the other things you mentioned, which you just consume.
Yeah, you have to, we have to like willingly go to this place. That's the weirdest sort of thing. One of the weird things about it. Yeah.
I'm sure it's just trivialized by everyone who lives near the place, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I remember walking in there, and of course you're greeted by these perfect character, perfect smiling characters who were born to run the Museum of Death, talking about being right where you need and want to be, you know? So it's...
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, you know? Like you said, death is all around us all the time, and the amount of effort it takes to ignore it is astounding. Unless you're an avid hunter, or you work at a hospital or a mortuary, you don't go near it. And even those people in those jobs, to varying degrees, I know some of them, and there's a few who have definitely grown through being in close contact with people, like hospice workers and such. But to a large degree, I think people who work in those types of professions build a defense posture against the day-to-day reality of their professions.
Don't forget about your core.
It seems like most people stay disconnected from death until they get their final prognosis from their doctor. And it seems like that's encouraged. Just be sad about it until then. Just pout. Pout about death until your doctor says it's your turn. So walking into the Museum of Death, you come face to face with it and with the violence that's everywhere, you know? Everywhere. Every moment, and you're face to face with it, and you can't ignore it. And the human animals that are committing that violence, they're the same animal as you, and they live in the same part of the world. They look like you. You know, what separates you from them? Different upbringing? I don't know. So you can't ignore it. A couple of the highlights were some Polaroid pictures, like actual Polaroid pictures that murderers took of their victims as they were torturing them. And real creepy air about them. And then there is a room that they set up just like a Stargate cult. I remember that group of people, the UFO was going to come get them. So they all drank the Kool-Aid at the same time. They had like their jumpsuits and the actual beds and everything set up, and it was really surreal. So, what was your experience like? How long did it take and everything?
It's a nice 2 hour or so experience, I think, if you really dive, two or three, if you dive deep into it. I mean, there's lots of videos going, lots of sometimes audio's going, like clips, photos and newspaper clippings all over the walls, books of things to look through, shelves and cabinets and whole displays, whole different rooms. We went relatively close to in time to each other. We probably saw most of the same stuff. I know some of it's rotating. So there's lots of actual relics. And then there's also like letters back and forth from serial killers, some of whom are still alive, some who aren't. And then paintings and letters written by those guys, some directly to the people who run the museum.
Yeah.
To and from.
Yeah, I think they're friends. Kinda like, they've made friends with a few of those classics.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They have. It's like they're doing it for all of us. And they, so they... I know for me, the first 15 minutes I stayed in that first room after, I mean, this is after I talked to them and got my ticket. It was $15 and it was near Christmas time, which was cool. So there was a Christmas tree there, which added to the charm of the whole thing. And I went inside, and I was alone going into it. And no one else was in there when I went in, which was nice. I was hoping it would stay that way the whole time. Because I thought, I don't even want to meet whoever wants to go here, you know? My only hope was they thought the same about me. But so for the first 15 minutes or half an hour, nobody else was there. And I just stood in that first room, and there was all the serial killer stuff, paintings and letters. And I was kind of reading it a little bit. And I remember thinking, like, oh, I'm tough, I can face this. And I was like, what am I even saying that for, you know? There's nothing going on. Like, this is just like some books and paintings. I mean, you know, this. So the battle started in my mind, you know, in that way. It was, you know, you can tell nothing's going on, but there's some huge, huge thing, at least for me, that started to build up. And I remember that it sort of hit a crescendo when I felt like, I realized I had just been standing still for like almost 15 minutes in the same spot, and just noticing my thoughts and not even looking at anything around me. And the thoughts started to become, I should just leave. This was only $15. There's no need to even be here. I should just go, because what do I care? It's just 15 bucks. I'm going to, you know, goodbye.
I've seen
it. And I remember, yeah, this is enough. And then I thought, then finally I was like, no. This is just fine. This is just fine. Let's just go for the whole ride. And from there, something else opened up, you know, and I looked up and I remember thinking there's supposed to be a severed head here of this French serial killer. And I looked up and I was standing right next to it that whole 15 minutes and didn't even see it.
Mm.
And there wasn't that glass case. I was like, oh, there's that guy.
Well, it's funny that way. That's an example of how we can miss things that are right in front of our eyes. And then The power of engaging things that we find uncomfortable, you know, whether it's My Little Pony or the President of the United States or whoever your favorite enemy is, and the power that those types of things hold on us.
Yeah, exactly. Like the ability for, say, anyone to put out a YouTube video or a meme on whatever social network, and that you feel, and it gets so popular that you and everyone else you know feel inclined to take a side on it without realizing that the meme isn't just the side you agree with, it's the whole thing. It's mm-hmm. the whole package of one side and the other side, and that's how it stays alive. It has a electric charge, so to speak, in your mind. A polar charge, and it's positive, negative, whatever you want to call it. I mean that in electrical terms, not in metaphysical terms, because of course that doesn't exist. But in terms of electrical charge, so to speak, that's where those ideas stay alive. Like by seemingly forcing you to take a side on a million different issues, and you do it automatically, and that forms the basis of your personality, kind of like a 100 question long yes no quiz that you answer, and then that becomes who you are, you know. And we've heard that quote before from Walt Whitman about battles are lost in the same spirit in which they're won, meaning it doesn't really matter if you win or lose a battle. The point is that you've already been engaged in a battle when you didn't need to be, about some issue you don't care about. So swinging it back around to the Museum of Death experience and starting to pay attention to what's going on. Well, that's one thing that's going to take you out of your polarizing fantasy land of opinions pretty damn quick. I know for me it did. Whatever I was thinking about and concerned about before I went into the Museum of Death went away completely. All that stuff, that's what that 15 minutes of standing still there was like this cleansing sort of airlock experience that was like allowing these doors to open. And when I was offered the choice, which was when my mind said, oh, let's just leave right now. And I was like, well, there's the stay or leave. And I was like, no, I'm staying. This is about to be pretty awesome. And that's that adventure, you know, spirit. And suddenly the whole experience opened up and it became very, very rich. And it's not like there wasn't some level of fear or trembling going on. That kind of increased and stayed strong the whole time, but there was just the acceptance of it that allowed it me to continue. And so yeah, for me, I know the things that stood out was the embalming room, and all these tools, both like old and modern, that have been used for embalming people, which is like what happens to like almost everyone in any sort of Western civilized nation to some degree or another. You get embalmed. So there's people who do those jobs, and so those people have to be trained. And ultimately, there are training videos for people who are going to school to learn that. So you get to see. So while I was there, that video was up on full blast, and you could just hear it. And the guy was just it was like the most insane monotone voice.
It's crazy. It reminds me of another Hollywood hotspot. The psychology museum there, where they have
psychiatry museum,
yeah. Similar type of thing. There's some kind of sadomasochistic, necrophiliac compulsion that's being acted out in the name of healing in that one case, and then ritual in another. And they both are very bizarre.
Yeah, extremely. But then what kind of came to light lately in terms of thinking of the Museum of Death was this idea of like reality or the experience of the world sort of resembling on a macrocosmic scale the experience of the Museum of Death, which sort of shocked me and delighted me at the same time. Now, that's not to say it's like you're living in a horror movie. Not exactly. There's tons and tons of delight, and the fact that I think the whole thing is delightful, existence itself. So let's get that out of the way. But seeing the planet, seeing the experience of life as kind of like a macrocosmic version of the Museum of Death. What do you think of that?
I like it, and you can kind of see the glue that keeps what we call society together is like blinders to the Museum of Death. And because that they're in denial about a lot of things, but they also, as a result, there's a lack of appreciation for everything, because the Museum of Death and leaving the Museum of Death was an affirmation for life for me afterwards walking out. And I really like that idea of life as Museum of Death, where you could treat that, you could go for a walk and just have that in your mind as you walk about. And of course, things don't stay as gnarly as you would think for that long, because it's the death that brings the sheen and the glow to everything. On the polar opposite side, you could say it's the life that brings the sheen to everything, but they have to be interconnected. And when you're living in a place where people are so disconnected, stepping into the Museum of Death, or, you know, a lot of other things that have been available through, that are in the courses, you explore death in similar types of ways.
Yeah, it's true. It's true that there's many ways you can get into it and face it. I remember when I started doing heavy undoing, and when I first, one of the times around meeting with Hyatt and stuff, and I remember going to my cousin's house it was the first time I met him, actually. And my cousin also lives in Arizona, so I went over to his house after the workshop. Before everything was chill and felt pretty good, and then I went to his house after. I know this was the second time I met Dr. Hyatt and this other workshop. So I showed up over at my cousin's house the second after the workshop. And I remember feeling like my whole fucking reality had been turned upside down and just destroyed and ripped apart from every angle. And I went to his house, and we were just hanging out, and on the TV, I remember thinking, this will be relaxing, let's just have fun. It was like Return of the Living Dead 2, which kind of makes it like Night of the Living Dead 3, because there's Night of the Living Dead, then there's Return of the Living Dead, then there's Return of the Living Dead 2.
I remember that one. That was the first horror movie I ever saw.
And remember, there's a part where there's like a screwdriver stuck in the head of one of the zombies. He's like, get this screwdriver out of my head.
Yeah, my buddy, I remember I was like 6 or 7, and my friend I was with, he was a couple years old. He was laughing his head off. I was not laughing.
Yeah. It's terrifying on some level, but it's like laughable too. And the weird part on the so when I was watching it at his house, sitting there after doing all this undoing and in the early days of my own undoing process, and I was just like, oh my God. And watching these zombies and on the zombie movie. And at one point, and I'll see if I can find this scene. Let me make a note here. And the scene, we'll try and put it on the notes. But it's where there's a guy who's been turned into a zombie, and he's like high school age or college age, and his girlfriend is there, and she's not a zombie yet. And he's like, come on, baby. Like, just let me eat your brains. It's me, Steve. Just let me eat your brains. Yeah, it's cool. And she's like, no, no. And he's like, come on. And she's like, oh, all right. And she turns her head down, and he just eats him. And it's like, fuck. What the fuck? That, and so watching it in that context of facing all this internal bullshit and garbage, and that's another thing you can think about death is that, interestingly enough, I had this massage teacher who was a chiropractor, and his professional wife, he also came and taught classes, and he described something he coined the term living rigor, which meant, referred to rigor mortis, which happens when you die in your muscles. The muscles become stiff as there's no more blood and oxygen pumping through them, and it's not removing waste, you know, the blood. And so he said the way we live and the way we sit and our postures and the way we use our bodies now caused us to have living rigor in different places in our bodies. And he liked to use that term because it would make people freak out. And because he felt that's like what he would observe when he would feel around in these people's muscles, was what he called living rigor. And he's like, come on, people, you know, you just got to bring life back to this through moving it.
Yeah.
And through bringing it, you know, he would do specific techniques, which, you know, you can do in person, but stuff you can do on your own too, remarkably enough.
Yeah, that's a frightening thing.
Yeah. Well, and that brings up, you know, a side note that most people might never think of. So I want to offer these as little gems or nuggets on every podcast, which is if you're a guy or a woman, but most of you guys listening are probably guys for whatever reason. And if you're a guy and you want to get really deep into your life and really start to tap into all these body resources like motivation, creativity, inspiration, all the stuff people say they want, but try to think their way and plan their way and manipulate their way into. If you want to get this stuff in a basic, immersive, you know, tangible sense in your experience and in your body, then you use these. You use the body techniques. You experience these things directly instead of just trying to think your way to it.
Let's talk a little bit about that on an internal level, as far as undoing and unleashing energies that may appear forbidding or foreboding and dealing with those.
Right, exactly. Well, that's where, like we said, at some point you're going to come up with and confront the idea of death, your own death. You realize you're thinking about other people that have died. And then, like we said, that experience expands from a personal level, like the people you know or animals, plants, whatever it is you're experiencing, to a general level of seeing the whole of existence, of your existence, as the museum of death. Now, I wanted to explain exactly what I mean by that on a deeper level, on a day-to-day experience level, which is look around. Everyone you know, even the ways you think about life right now and the ways you think about yourself right now, and all the people you know, all the things you have, the clothes, the items, all of those. The hairs on your head, you know, all the people, all the situations in your life that seem so solid and stable right now, the apartment, wherever it is, whatever it is, all of that stuff, and you know this to be true, is on its way out at some speed, whether fast or slow, it's all on its way out. But the interesting thing is that when you start to see that and become aware of that and watch that, yeah, there's some level of melancholy and sorrow, and that's okay. That's part of the deal. But that's completely tied up with appreciation for how awesome it is, because you could not feel sorrow or any kind of melancholy at all without having that be rooted in the experience of joy. There's no possible way. The only time you can experience sorrow at all is because of a memory of joy, okay? So keep that in mind. And then we mentioned before the living rigor. So the body starts to die. The muscles start to die in fragments, even while you're still alive, because of lack of movement. Now that represents, like we talked about before, the body is the unconscious. So that represents places you've walled off in your mind, conflicts that you've walled off that just keep going, and it just forms a tension. Almost all of them relate to death and suffering. So by facing death deliberately, turning toward it, opening up to whatever it is for you, which is a personal organic experience, okay? By doing that, you're bringing life and energy and tingling back into all those spots in your body and in your mind and in your life that you've ignored, that you've ran away from, that you're trying to hide from. And in so doing, you immediately increase your blood flow in your body. The oxygen content of your blood becomes richer. Your breathing gets deeper because you stop the emergency sensations. And from there, your brain opens up. You can see clearly the opportunities that are available to you. And you'll have the motivation and the groundedness to take advantage and take action on those. Both of us know that from experience. And almost everyone I've worked with knows that from experience at this point.
The awareness is like a flashlight. Hey, you go through all those abandoned rooms and into the basement and track down anything that needs to be mourned and in turn celebrated.
Exactly. It can't be mourned without it also being celebrated.
So, and it can be intimidating initially to sink deeply into that. I recall being really shocked at how glaring some of the experiences I were having. But the more, you know, my flashlight got bigger, I was able to sit with them longer and let those experiences expand and move through my awareness, rather than looking away, running away.
Don't forget about your corpse.
And there's all kinds of cool ways to confront it. I know one of my favorite ways has been exploring abandoned buildings, especially in smallish towns in the U.S. For some reason in the U.S., I always felt relatively safe going into most abandoned buildings. Sometimes in cities, it'll be pretty scary, but small abandoned houses, you know. You find town, almost whole abandoned towns, a little different here in Colombia than it is in the U.S., but certainly there's those things available. Check out atlasobscura.com as a cool site. I'll make a note of it in the page here too, but atlasobscura.com is just a lot of fun, but that you'll be able to find some of those abandoned places near you in the world through that site, and go check them out and just take pictures and feel what's going on there. There's a way to experience that depth and richness in abandoned places, because you're forced to confront the fact that something used to be going on there and it's not anymore. So yeah, you know, and we were going to put up a bunch of cool links actually and videos all surrounding this. So if you're listening again on iTunes or Stitcher or any of the other, or Blueberry, any of the other places we've sent this out, you can always come back to radicalondoing.com/blog and find the post there, or go to artofnotgivingafuck.com/podcast. You'll find the most recent episodes there, plus a list of all the episodes. And from there, you can just click, and what you'll find is that each of these podcast episodes will expand into a whole rich adventure unto itself, and you can explore that as you feel inspired and motivated to do so. just by going to artofnotgivingafuck.com/podcast and clicking around and seeing where that adventure leads you. Be warned, if you're listening right now and you haven't already watched those videos back on the site, this is the art of not giving a fuck. So we're not afraid to post things that are a little bit disturbing and startling to you. So that's all I'm going to say about that. But there are going to be some links and some videos there that, if you're ready, will allow you to explore this a lot more deeply. Lance, my friend, any closing thoughts on the topic of death?
I'd encourage anyone who engaged in this conversation in an honest way to look at the relationship between death and creativity. Because for me, any uncomfortable experiences I ever went through always brought about, there was always a catalyst for new creativity. So think of death as creative process and how that might inspire you. Because when I think about this podcast, the Art of Not Giving a Fuck podcast, from a perspective, I can see it as a ruse. Because I know that the less fucks I give, the more I'm capable to care and create with what is in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But what if to enter into this new experience of life where I can care and create on deeper levels, what if that's the equivalent of walking through death's door? Well, that's not giving a fuck.
Yeah, that's the cool thing. It's possible from the discomfort of your own home.
From the discomfort of your own home.
All right, man. Well, it's good to meet up and rap about death. Now that we close this one up, we'll be able to go into some really cool adventurous territory. So stay tuned. But I hope this gets as dark as it needs to get for you. And then we'll be able to leap out of this pit next time. So stay tuned.
Good night.
Then you might think every day you're on the brink. It's moldy. Who knows what time we have left? So raise a cup. Here's to death, it's closer than you might think. Every day you're on the brink, it's moving. When the sun goes up in the morning, memento.
Maybe that's a little too far.